Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz, episode 32 for July 11th, 2008, Sugar CRM. This show and the entire TWiT broadcast network is brought to you by donations from listeners like you. Thanks. It's time for Floss Weekly, the latest in open source free Libre software. Here he is, Mr. Libre himself. From Stonehenge.com, Randall Schwartz. Hey, Randall, how are you?
Well, Leo, I'm a little hot.
I have to apologize. We are having, you know, Randall, first of all, Randall's in studio, which is really nice. Nice to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting
me back.
You've
been doing that a lot lately.
I didn't knock over enough equipment last time, so you said you can go ahead and come back, and we'll see if I can knock over some stuff again.
However, we're also having the worst heat wave we've had in a long time in Northern California.
It's currently 101 degrees outside and about 130 in here.
Feels like it, because with all the equipment, but we've got a big old air conditioner, and as soon as we stop talking, we can turn it on.
So
let's get right to episode 32. Today, we're going to do something that I am not comfortable with in the least, and I'm really upset about it.
Really?
No, I'm just kidding. I have to say, I'm not completely comfortable with it because I have, in, you know, my whole career as a tech journalist, pretty much stuck with end-user software, and I've very rarely covered business-to-business or enterprise software at all, but that's what we're going to cover today.
Yes, it's a product known, a company known as Sugar CRM. A CRM is a customer relations manager, something like that, a client relation manager. And I was brought this lead to talk to John Roberts, the CEO.
It's appropriate you should call it a lead, yes.
Unless it's a lead, right? By a mutual friend of mine a friend of mine that now works for that company. So he said, "You got to talk to these guys." I said, "Very good, let's do it." So.
Can you? I mean, I can kind of do my best, but maybe you can do a better job. What is CRM?
Oh, boy, maybe you could do better.
I know it's customer relations management. It can mean a lot of different things. It can mean Salesforce automation. Right. So your sales team would, for instance, enter in a new customer, keep track of them, you know, what they bought. It can be almost business intelligence, in fact, if you put enough data in there about what customers are doing and how they're participating with you, if they're moving in, moving out.
It's what your sales and marketing group really needs sort of as their focus. It brings all that stuff together.
And it can be a challenge because if you've ever worked with salespeople, the last thing they want to do is paperwork. Mm-hmm. The last thing they want to do is data entry. And yet, from the business point of view, it's so important that you get this information, you collate it, and you cross-reference it so you get an idea. I mean, it's like bookkeeping for your customers. It's keeping track of your customers.
Right, because if a guy in New York hears a possible lead of something that's happening in Atlanta, he needs some place to write that down so the guy in Atlanta knows to go out and actually make the call.
Right.
And that sort of management, you know, people doing it ad hoc with email and Excel spreadsheets and things like that every day. And a formal CRM system like Sugar CRM kind of brings that into some central place where everybody can track and watch and see where the leads are going and things like that. So it's really essential to the front end of a business.
It isn't something that you would typically think of as being an open source project, and yet I think it's one of the most successful open source projects, at least in terms of commercial open source projects.
From what I've been reading about it so far, be anxious to see where that develops in our conversation.
We have a big shot. We have the CEO, John Roberts. Now, typically, I don't like to talk to CEOs. In this case, he's an engineer CEO. He's one of the founders of the company. Mm-hmm. He's been there since the beginning.
Right.
Worked for commercial CRM companies and said there has to be a better way.
Yeah.
So let's say hello, I think, to John Roberts. He's calling us from Cupertino. He is the CEO of Sugar CRM. John, welcome to the show. It's great to have you. Before we go very far, we probably should explain what Sugar CRM is.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
Sugar CRM, we call ourselves a commercial open source software company. In that we, in 2004, myself and my co-founders, we founded the enterprise CRM open source project, Sugar CRM, and we founded it on SourceForge.net 4 years ago. And over the last 4 years, it's grown to be one of the largest open source enterprise business applications on the planet today. So we're very thankful for that. But I think it does show that Open source has kind of moved beyond operating systems and programming languages and databases all the way to very serious business applications as
it,
well.
It does sound like a contradiction in terms when you say a commercial open source application.
Yeah. Well, the reason why I say commercial is because, you know, we just want to be very completely clear and transparent about who we are and how we kind of run the project and the company. And essentially what Sugar is an open source project powered enterprise. And we're not, you know, in the early days, yeah, we did work for free and we were just, you know, designing and writing Sugar open source as three guys who would resign their jobs, but we knew you can't work for free forever. Mm-hmm. So, and this was 2004. So as but what we wanted to do was really to see whether our ideas and the code that we were writing was resonating and was really were able to develop a worldwide project and really get the input of developers around the world, which we're able to do. But at the same time, we are a for-profit corporation. So the reason why we put commercial in front of open source is because we didn't want to mislead folks to say that we're 100% open source, because we're not. We do open source license under the GPL v3, the majority of the software that we write, and we've done that since inception. But at the same time, we are a for-profit corporation, and we don't want to hide that fact either.
So is there a free version of Sugar CRM, or is it only paid?
Oh, it's completely free. So if you go to sugaropensource.org or sugarcrm.com, you can download Sugar Community Edition, and it is completely open source. It is completely licensed under the GPL v3. It is the work of over 4 years of engineering, over, I guess, 35 full-time engineers, and then an extended community of another 100. And then today the project is well over 400 extensions. It's been downloaded close to 2.5 million times, 4 million times with other extensions, developers of Britain. It's been translated into over 75 languages by developers around the world.
Now, with that, do you get like a usable system already, or is that just so much of a core that you really need to add things to make it do anything useful?
Great question. It is absolutely 100% usable. In our view of it, there's absolutely no purpose in open sourcing software that doesn't really do anything or is crippleware in some way. The way we've kind of separated kind of our products is we did author Sugar CRM from scratch. We didn't go out and harvest other open source components and create a stable distribution. We actually wrote it from scratch. Then we chose to open source license the software that we've written. From then, we have basically three kind of editions of that the source code is based on. And basically, it's one source code tree. Sugar is written 100% in the PHP programming language. It's probably one of the most advanced PHP applications ever written in terms of the RDBMS nature of it. At the same time, Sugar Open Source or Community Edition, as we call it, is a fully functional sales, marketing, customer support, contact management solution. It doesn't have any restrictions. You could run it for 1,000 users. But at the same time, its target really is 5 to 30 user sales, marketing, customer support folks. And the reason is because we want to keep it kind of simple. We don't want to overcomplicate the app. So it's something you can download it, install it within 15 minutes. It runs on pretty much every operating system, Windows, Linux, FreeBSD, even AS400, Windows, of course, even Mac OS X, and be running and is a fully functional application. We sell our Professional Edition, which is basically a supported version of Community Edition, which provides additional training, additional support. And then we have our Enterprise Edition, which has some higher-end clustering capabilities for larger deployments. So as a company, we consider ourselves a project-powered enterprise in that, you know, if you look at our Sugar open source has become, even if you do a Google search like on CRM, you'll see that Sugar actually comes up as one of the hits on the first page, even surpassing some of the big proprietary CRM applications, because it is a very powerful CRM application. It is completely for free. The source code, PHP, is completely provided with it. You can extend it. It's the rights to the software are the rights that the GPL v3 grants, and so it's It's a completely legitimate open source
Is that a two-way process? Do you get back contributions from the community, like bug fixes or enhancements, and bring those into your mainline product?
Yes, we do. We do it in a number of ways. The first way we do it is we built Sugar knowing initially that the thought was, you know, we were getting kind of frustrated, and I've been in Silicon Valley now, I guess, 15 years, and I was getting frustrated in that I grew up in Washington, D.C., and then moved out here in 95, and going through a lot of release cycles, and I thought, well, God, why are we building just 100% proprietary lock-in-based software, whether it's on-demand or on-site, and basically locking customers into enterprise customer management solutions, when why can't, in just assuming that just because the software originates out of Silicon Valley, that we're smarter than the rest of the world, and having traveled a lot, and I thought, you know, and just kind of embracing the idea of the collective intelligence of crowds of people from around the world all having good ideas. And so we said, well, let's turn the engineering methodology kind of inside out from a traditional proprietary company, which is, you know, to spend, most CRM companies will spend 60-70% of their operating expenses on sales and marketing, and probably 10% of their operating expenses on the actual engineering of the product that they make. And we thought, you know, I just thought we could really focus on great software and not so much great marketing, because in the end, you know, for every dollar you give a corporation, if they're only spending 10 cents of it on engineering, it's kind of wasteful. So we said, well, why not focus on engineering, write, you know, the software, create an open collaborative environment in that, and license it under an open source license, and use, if the software is good, if the ideas are good, hopefully we'll be able to create a global community which will propel the software even more, and then hopefully down the road we'll benefit as a corporation as well. So in knowing that ahead of time, we built Sugar as a completely modular application. Then Sugar is a CRM, customer relationship management applications are used for all different types. Basically, they're human interaction platforms for managing people, tasks, behaviors, and as a result, you know, government organizations use them, high-tech companies use them, pharmaceutical companies use them, banks use them, small business use them, big complex corporations.
Anybody with customers.
Yeah, pretty much everybody. Yeah. So at that point, you know, the key to CRM is you want to keep the app as fast and as small and as tight as possible, so that it really is. And I think the failure of CRM over the last 20 years has been the tendency of vendors to build a lot of screens, and people don't necessarily need a lot of screens. What they need is a really productive tool to help them manage their customers. So from getting to your question, which was, how does your community work? Well, yeah, we have our core. The core base of Sugar is the platform that we do write. We do have follow, in some ways, kind of traditional engineering. We have a full product management release process, goes into an engineering process we do, and then we have our support and QA. At the same time, over the years, like most open source projects, you kind of develop a trusted network of engineers that you establish relationships with, mostly over the web, with engineers around the world that give you patches, ideas, tweaks to the software, to the foundation that makes it better. And the fact that we write the PHP code knowing that other engineers and developers are going to be reading the code, versus if we were a proprietary company, we wouldn't care about the source code because no one's ever going to see it. They're just going to see the APIs. But when you're a commercial open source software company, you know, you write, it's almost like writing a book in third person versus first person. And as a result, it makes it much easier for us to create higher quality, more innovative software because you're leveraging ideas. But at the same time, everybody's ideas don't necessarily make it into the platform because you want to keep the platform pretty small and tight. So what we did there is, yeah, so we do have a kind of a core community of trusted developers that you just work with over the last 4 years. And so we have that. The other main mechanism that is more of a broader use one is a site we created called SugarForge, sugarforge.org, SugarForge.org. Mm-hmm. And what SugarForge is basically it's a site where anyone can come in and say, "Hey, I've got an extension for Sugar that is unique to the health fitness market space, or the pharmaceutical market space, or the financial services space." And so it may not be applicable to everyone, but it's applicable to enough of the group that I want to share this module. And so from there, we allow developers to, any idea is a good idea, and they have everything from someone wrote like a I think it was like a Second Life module, so you could be more efficient inside a Second Life selling.
Keep track of your customers in Second Life. I love that.
You get some pretty crazy ideas, but that's kind of the beauty of it. Most of them tend to deal with, you know, kind of extensions for adding components for connectors to different things, or VoIP connectors, Skype connectors, for example, like what we're talking on. And as a result, today there's over 500 extensions. The idea with sugarforge.org is that they're all open source. As well, and because what we're putting there is open source and everything else as well, and so everything is completely free. And if you go to SugarForge, you can't buy anything, and you never will be able to. We also created but at the same time, you know, us as an organization, we, you know, obviously authored and founded and invest heavily in the project, and we benefit economically as a result of it. But we didn't want to be. We also, at a certain point, felt, well, we shouldn't be the only ones to benefit from the project itself from an economic perspective. And yes, SugarForge is great, but there again, it's, we put our open source software on there and we allow other people, but then again, other people really can't generate commerce from it as well. So we create another site called sugarexchange.com, and that allows other developers to actually create commercial extensions as well as, and sell them on that site as well. So we wanted to create an avenue where not only could other folks kind of contribute to the core, but also any idea is a good idea on the forge, but also create a third way, which is to, if you have a really, we call them pajama developers. We would come up with someone will write an extension to Outlook or something like that through our web services. And and if they want to sell that, Sugar Exchange is designed to be able to allow them to benefit as well.
That's very
so
cool.
It's really three different ways.
Yeah. We talked to, go ahead.
Most folks, I think, I've been on a lot of panels over the years, and people say, well, why do people join community, this or that? And I think the general perception is that, well, you want to contribute to an open source project because, you know, you're a committer, you're able to get your idea transmitted around the globe. And that in itself is a very powerful motivator. But in the end, I also believe that, you know, I'll be perfectly honest, I didn't necessarily found the project to work for free for the rest of my life. You know, I found the project to try to just validate that the ideas and the code that we were writing really was valuable. And before we actually kind of built a company around it. So I think that, you know, for successful open source projects over the long term, it's not only creating the ecosystem that allows people to contribute to the software, but also, and additionally, it creates an avenue for them also to benefit economically as well.
We talked to Larry Augustin on this show, Chris DeBona and I, a while ago, and he said the future in open source is with enterprise applications, because people who want to try enterprise applications, instead of getting a purchase order and spending a lot of money or downloading a demo, they could just go and go get an open source program like Sugar CRM. They can install it, and they could try it, and they get hooked on it, and it's a really good model for people who are buying enterprise software.
It is. I mean, it's interesting. In 2000, Larry's actually on our board of directors and has been, you know, just a huge asset to the company over the years. And Larry, you're right. In 2004, it was pretty interesting because I was, you know, going down Sand Hill Road at that point, I saw the project taking off, and we couldn't, you know, achieve our goals, which was, you know, just funding it ourselves. So we needed some venture capital. And going down Sand Hill Road in 2004, you go in these meetings and everybody would say, well, you know, open source only applies to operating systems, or it only applies to programming languages or database, but absolutely not applications. No way.
Right.
And I thought, you know, managing your revenue stream is pretty important business problem for most companies. And I just bet that there are a lot of people around the planet that are equally, you know, interested in managing the most optimal revenue stream for their company, and that there is a community of people that are interested in customer relationship management applications, just like there's a community interested in operating systems. I also had this kind of belief that, you know, most information technology folks in the information technology space got management information systems degrees, not necessarily computer science degrees.
Right.
And, you know, what you really get is in management information degree, you're trained to implement efficient business applications that allow the company to achieve its business goals. And in open source, I think up to this point was really just focused on the computer science majors. And granted, they're the CS guys that we actually write the software with, but at a user level, no, we don't think that you need to be a computer science major to use open source. I think that is a bit of a myth at the moment. People, you know, the proprietary CRM vendors always like to try to position Sugar as you have to be a developer, you have to be right. super technical, but you don't.
Right.
It's in fact, it's almost the complete opposite. But
so it's fairly turnkey. You just download it, and it's mostly
yeah.
ready to
because
go.
If you think about it, it's yeah, absolutely. Actually, we have a download wizard. It walks you right through. It says what operating system, what version, what check. You know, what is your environment you want to run it on, and it custom creates a package for you. So in a sense, you know, for us. You know, most, I think there's also another trend as well where you get an industry that, you know, we're very bullish on demand and cloud computing. But at the same time, I think, you know, giving folks the ability to run database applications on their own servers, whether they're hosted or not, and giving them control over these applications and also giving them the freedom to modify them in any way that they feel makes sense to them, not the way that the vendor makes sense, is really what a better approach than proprietary vendors saying there's only one way to do something. And as a result, you get more modern technology stacks, such as the LAMP stack and maturing database such as MySQL and Linux, and you get this environment where, for us, our installer is really important to us because it's the first impression. If Sugar isn't up and running in 15 minutes, we failed. But at the same time, we got to assume that there's zero training.
And like you just said, though, I mean, it's great. I think you hit the point, but I want to make sure this gets emphasized, is that because it's open source, I mean, of all things that need to be customized, CRM is clearly something that's very specific to a company. So to have
Absolutely.
It as open source, you have this wonderful flexibility that anybody can go in and say, no, I don't deal with my customers on this kind of a rotating basis. I deal with it on this other thing that we've been using successfully in our company, and they can adapt Sugar CRM.
Somebody like you can come in and do
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Or so they can hire yeah. me to come in, and if they're not savvy,
right.
yeah.
Right, right.
I mean, yeah, their idea is, you know, if your customer management strategy is your competitive differentiation, and if everybody's using the exact same app and is limited to the exact same customization tools and the proprietary vendors are locking everything down, you're really not going to be able to differentiate the way that you manage your customer base versus your competitors. So, you know, for us, yeah, we are a commercial open source software company. Sugar CRM, you do not need to be a programmer to download and run Sugar or even to run Sugar on demand. But at the same time, you never have to fear that you can't do something you feel is competitive to your business.
And that's another thing, too, is that some of these other application platforms have data lock-in. So you get all your customer data locked up in some proprietary database that you can't get into, but not with Sugar then, because it's an open database as well, right?
Absolutely. We support Microsoft SQL Server, MySQL, and Oracle. I'd say the majority of our customer base runs on MySQL. And I think MySQL is, and not that SQL Server is a great database, Oracle is a great database, but MySQL is proved also equally to be an incredibly powerful database. And the advantage is, like for us, we're one of the few on-demand CRM companies that does hosting and on-site, and people will say, well, how can you do both? Well, it's really not as hard as it used to be. I mean, 10 years ago, yeah, you had to build this big monolithic, you know, multi-tenant thing. But nowadays, you really don't need to do that because you can cluster Linux servers together and then run a whole series of MySQL databases under one centralized management infrastructure. And that way, if a customer wants to run on demand, they can run it on demand. But at any moment, if they want to run on site, they can take the whole app and the database and just run on site. In a matter of 2 hours, and they have complete control over the lifetime. They completely own their data and the database.
So you should mention, you do have to have Apache installed to use it, and I mean, it's a LAMP stack.
Right. We have multiple installers. So if, you know, some of the, you know, so you can kind of choose, you know, do you have the LAMP stack installed? Yes, no, no. We'll install the whole LAMP stack for you.
Right, right. I just downloaded it. 13 megabytes. Pretty quick.
13.
Yeah, that's without the LAMP stack. That's pretty good.
Yeah. Well, it's probably, I don't know, 500,000 lines of code now. I mean, it's been a lot of work to write it.
Wow.
So it's probably one of the largest PHP apps ever written.
How many modules are there? How many user contributed modules? A lot.
Yeah. Well, there's the Sugar Forge is probably has the largest. So there's over 400 there of all sorts of different types and flavors. Language packs tend to get a lot of attention. So we're over 75 now. It's probably, you know, pretty much every major language on the planet is there's a language pack for, and in sometimes multiple language packs, like in German, there's like an Austrian German, Swiss German, and German. I mean, it's pretty interesting how it just really proves that, you know, the collect, if you write software in a way that allows other people to extend it, and you're not afraid to give them the ability to do that, that, and I think most proprietary companies are afraid to do that, because then the whole basis of their business model is lock-in. And so, you know, the more control they give the customer, the less lock-in leverage they have. And I think, you know, part of founding Sugar as an open source project and kind of rebelling against that was we've always felt that putting the customer in control is, you know, is on the surface may not be good for lock-in, but we just kind of reject that notion of lock-in and really want to earn the right for the customer's business every year. And that's why Sugar Open Source is completely functional. It is why it's a completely it is a world-class CRM application, and we don't hide behind artificial restrictions, because I don't think you need to anymore.
Do you demand a particular version of PHP? Because I know there's like changes between 4 and 5 that make it kind of difficult to port.
I mean, we're on the PHP committee, and we push PHP pretty hard. What we do is we've got some anonymous heartbeats that come back from our servers. We're not looking for who's using Sugar and what your name. We're not do that, but we do get some anonymous statistics that you can kind of turn on and turn off in the admin console, and it helps us understand, you know, what particular operating system, what version, what database, what version, what clients are you using, what parts of the app are you really hammering on, and as a result, what version of PHP you're on. So we've been on the 4.4 branch for a while, and sometimes we've delayed just because a big part of our community was on 4, and it's taken a while for 5 really to catch on, but I think going forward, I don't think we're going to support 4 by the end of this year, because 5, it just gives you a lot more object-oriented capabilities, and it's just stronger. And you know, I really want to, you know, the PHP community has been great as well, and they've been using Sugar as kind of a reference app to kind of test the language, and it's really helped a lot.
What are the challenges of doing enterprise open source software? I you already kind of touched on one, which is just overcoming people's skepticism about the whole thing.
I think, you know, what you're saying, Larry Augustin was saying, you know, in the early days, yeah, it was, you know, well, you have to be a hardcore developer,
right,
and, or, you know, you're just, you know, a bunch of hackers. And, you know, I think a lot of open source, you know, open source kind of started that way. It was kind of a rebellious movement in that regard. I think we still feel very strongly about, I just spent too many years here in the Valley building completely proprietary lock-in software. And I just thought, you know, this isn't necessarily the best way to write software.
Yeah.
And so I'm, you know, it has been, and it was an experiment in the early days, and that's why we did, you know, launch a new project and, you know, resign, did take a pretty big gamble, because we all had pregnant wives at the time. And we said, you know, just give us 6 months wow, and let us test this notion that we can, our ideas and engineering possibly for the first time can supersede who can spend the most on sales. But I think that the notion, you know, 4 years ago, you know, Sugar CRM was absolutely, it was a bet that engineering, we're at a point where the internet is enabling the good ideas to spread rapidly for practically zero cost. And prior to the internet and the notion of folks to collaborating globally on software, even though we speak different languages and we use, you know, translation services to chat with one another, that, you know, the net result is it is redefining how to build great software. And I think ultimately, you know, we're ending, you know, 4 years, and we're, as a company, we're 160 employees. We have 3,500 paying customers over 30 countries within 4 years, and we're growing like a rocket. Mm. So it's been, it was kind of a test, you know, could we be more open? Could we focus on engineering and put the customer in control and reject kind of traditional lock-in on-demand and on-site things? And I think 4 years later, we're seeing that, yeah, it's happened much faster. We're much bigger than we thought. Much faster, which is a great thing. The community is 3 times the size, or 10 times what we thought it would be at this point. But for me, that gives me the most satisfaction is that Sugar is the commercial open source methodology for writing software in public is harder. You have to be better engineers to do it, but ultimately, it does generate more innovative, higher quality software and software for that is ultimately less expensive in the end. And the reason, you know, a lot of folks think open source, oh, it's cheaper. Well, yeah, it's not necessarily cheaper. It's higher quality. It's because you have more people viewing the source code for a longer period of time. It's more innovative because you have a lot of ideas coming into it, not just, you know, one vendor thinking they're smarter than the rest of the world. And it's also much it's much less costly because, you know, if your focus is engineering and you open source, you know, the majority of the code that you write, and, you know, if that software is good, that tends also to make the phone ring for you as well. But it's the same dollar that you put into engineering salaries also makes the phone ring at the same time. It's not, you know, 10 cents on engineering and, you know, 70 cents on sales and marketing, because that marketing spend really doesn't benefit the customer at all.
No, it benefits you.
It doesn't.
Yeah.
It doesn't. So it's less costly because we don't have to charge the customer to sell to them to the extent that proprietary companies do.
Do people worry about security? I know PHP is not necessarily got a great track record when it comes to security. How do you handle authentication, PHP security, that kind of thing?
Sugar has been analyzed up and down ever since the beginning. I mean, in the early days, there was, you know, it was, you know, it's, I love it, actually. I think that the best part of running a legitimate open source project is, you get things like, we didn't know that Brazil had changed their daylight savings time by an hour.
Right.
You know, and right. We would never, traditional QA tests wouldn't have picked that
up. But they let you know.
You hear about it.
Yeah.
And it does make the software better. Security, you do get some vulnerabilities from time to time. But, you know, all software gets vulnerabilities from time to time. And no one's immune. I think, you know, it's really kind of comes back to that. And this is an old analogy, but it is a good one, which is, you know, we prefer to live in a house that's lit up versus one that's you're in the dark and your security is that people can't see your holes versus making it so that there's, you know, it's so lit up that that everyone can see that
everybody sees them. Yeah.
Right. And I think, you know, you take different, most proprietary companies, it's just, you just kind of hide in darkness and hope no one doesn't see the holes. So,
right.
Speaking of your development methodology, do you have like a good comprehensive integration testing and unit testing for your code?
Yeah, absolutely.
And when people submit patches, are they required to submit a test?
You know, I don't know the answer to that.
Okay. Because that also helps. When you're getting input from the community, sometimes that's the best way to ask for it.
Yeah.
Make them write the test module themselves. Yes,
I completely agree with that. I think it's most folks are more interested in saying, hey, this is broken, and here's the test case to go with it. So, yeah, we love the idea of test cases. But, you know, ultimately, we just, you know, it's we'll take someone pointing out a bug, and we'll create the test case. But, yeah, test cases are always appreciated.
And what's your background? Are you a technical guy or a leader guy? What's your background?
I'm kind of all over the map. I got a bachelor's of science in business with concentration in marketing, and then I spent a lot of time. I had really extreme dyslexia growing up, my parents got me a PC really young, and so I just latched on to PCs in the late '80s and. Found myself in Silicon Valley. I've just always been drawn here. So I guess I'm not a traditional engineer, but I just I've been pretty much in the engineering pretty much my whole career since I've been out here. I was in sales engineering for a long time in the field working with customers, and I think that was probably one of the best experiences because then you get to see, you know, reality versus, you know, what people think are good ideas. But my main forte is probably product management. I probably spent most time in product management. Leadership style, I don't know, I'm a hard ass. I'll admit it.
That's true.
I'll admit it, I am a bit of a hard ass. And I just, you know, it's a real pleasure to, Sugar CRM is just an incredible company, and really fortunate to, you know, I'm just really excited to be here. And we just, what's also great about Sugar CRM is I've been in the CRM industry since 1992, and you know, I take a lot of pride in that. Pretty much everyone here is folks that we've worked with in the past. And in a sense, we're folks, CRM started in, you know, legitimately around 1995. with Siebel, Orem, Scopus, Vantiv, this kind of first generation client server companies. And that's when I was a sales engineer in the field and things like that. And we were kind of all in the trenches. And then when we founded Sugar, everyone kind of came together here. And it's, I would probably describe Sugar as is folks that, that are from the trenches that are now, you know, really focused on writing CRM software that, that really works.
You had a lot of choices of open source language or open source licenses when you started, I'm sure. What made you settle on, I guess, originally GPL2 and now 3?
Oh, that's a good question. Long story, too. We initially chose the Mozilla public license when we started. And the main reason was is because until we really came around to this, there are other commercial open source software companies now, like MuleSource and Alfresco and Xenos. There's a whole class of them now. We were probably one of the early ones. But in the CRM world, you do spend a lot of time on user experience and the user interface, because when you're dealing with salespeople, they're not easy people to keep in front of a computer entering data. So you have to really spend a lot of time on the user experience to make it attractive to them. We found in the early days, folks were just taking our code left and right and just putting their name all over it, you know, as something that they wrote. It happens a lot.
Really?
Really? Wow. Really.
It seems like that'd be easy to catch, I guess, unless they go closed with it and then they can't.
No, but it is. It is. But it, you know, at the same time, it. So we started out with the Mozilla public license, and then we added this attribution clause that basically said that, you know, you can redistribute it, you can sell it, you can do whatever you want with it, but you just cannot completely bury the fact that who the original authors were. And, you know, we took a lot of heat for that, actually, from the OSI and groups for about 2 years. And really? We felt pretty strongly about it. I don't know if you guys were aware of that. We felt pretty strongly about it. But I think it had more to do with you know, at that time, open source really wasn't pushing applications. It was more lower levels of the stack. So that maybe wasn't such an important issue at the time.
Right.
And, you know, and to OSI's credit, you know, a new license which was introduced called the... it's called the CPL, the common was, I think it's attribution license now, that actually does validate that is part of a legal open source attribute. So in the end, it actually worked out but we you know, people were kind of critical of us for a little while for adding that provision, but now it's a fully endorsed and supported provision with the open source community. I just think we ended up having to kind of push it a bit, but during that time, and we fully support the open source initiative and think that, you know, it's a hard job, you know, keeping open source, you know, keeping companies that claim to be open source and making sure that they're indeed open source. And I think they are doing a good job in doing that. And at times you get changes and different forces on software, and licenses are going to evolve over time. And, you know, I give them a lot of credit for endorsing and accepting the CPAL license. It's the Common Public Attribution License, it's called now. But during that time, I also started really liked Eben Moglen and Richard Stallman and the work that they were doing and taking GPL2 to GPL3. And that was right when we were coming out, going into our early community previews and betas of Sugar 5.0, which was a major release for us last year. And we thought that, you know, I've always felt that the GPL was the gold standard of open source licenses. And so we used that last summer as an opportunity to drop the Mozilla public license and switch to the GPL V3. And that way we could just use just the vanilla license that the Free Software Foundation provides. And that's what we did last year. And we're very happy that we did that. Although we think the CPAL license is a good license as well. I think it's really kind of up to the author kind of to decide what makes the most sense for them.
So you're GPL3.
That's correct. We're GPL version 3.
Yeah.
Somebody in the chat room just asked if know whether or not Sugar CRM out of the box will run on an iPhone, or if there's any plans to make it work on an iPhone.
Or an iPhone plug-in, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think it'll run with it. I don't think there's Apache on the iPhone yet.
Well, no, you know, but I mean, run as...
Oh, yeah, sure.
What I can say is we're a huge Apple shop. I mean, I'm hardcore, and probably half our engineers use Write on Apple. We just released with our 5.0 a client that runs on. It's not a native, rich client, but it's a really fast web app that displays really, really well on an iPhone. So it, you know, it's, you know, it's so it's not a local database, but it's direct hits back and forth. But it's designed for the form factor for the iPhone screen footprint. And then we also we're big supporters of the Android client as well, and we'll be you know, as that continues to firm up, as well as the Open Social standard as well. We're big fans of both of those, both I guess coming out of Google, and we're going to be continuing to add more support for both of those.
Great. Android, here we come. It makes sense, though, if you're doing Salesforce automation in particular, that you'd want the sales team to be able to use mobile devices to do data entry.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there are a number of great wireless providers that have built extensions for Sugar for Blackberries and right. Windows mobile devices. And so we got a really good, I think, range of mobile device support. The one that we write natively, our focus there is just writing a really fast, very small footprint, optimized web app that will run really nicely on a device like an iPhone. And then we also give, you know, folks the ability to customize it and take it in any direction that they want to take it as well.
You said earlier that you have some sort of web service interface as well. Do you have anything lightweight like a JSON interface for XHTTP kind of things?
We use we very strongly believe in web services. And the notion of being able to drive Sugar completely without touching the user interface through web service calls. Mm. So today, the way we mostly do that is through SOAP calls.
So you can
push and pull pretty much anything within Sugar through web service SOAP calls. And if that web service isn't there, you can create it.
Obviously,
so cool. you're not going to be dependent upon the vendor to create it for you.
Nice.
Well, we really appreciate your spending some time with us. I'm so impressed that you're able to make it in the enterprise space with what is essentially open source software. I don't want to say free. There is a free version.
There is, absolutely.
Yeah.
We want to earn the business. You know, we don't want to. You know, it's not so much, hey, you know, look at our ad and our great marketing. It's try it, download it, run it for 6 months, run it for a year. We want to earn the business.
Yeah.
And yeah, we feel that's really the best way to do it.
Yeah. As Larry said, I think enterprise is the next big frontier for open source software. And he's got a number of companies he's working with that really prove the point.
Mm-hmm.
Sugar CRM being at the forefront.
Very cool.
Well, it's working for us. So I think I do believe that this whole industry is going to get turned upside down over the next decade. And I think that, you know, hiding behind proprietary on demand or proprietary on software is just not going to survive because more and more people are taking the red pill nowadays.
Yep. Yep.
And
mm-hmm.
I think that's, you know, ultimately the customer wins. And I think it's great for the industry. I think it's great for innovation. I think it's great that people from all around the world can contribute to making software more innovative, not just the ones that choose to live in Silicon Valley. Not that the Valley isn't a great place to live. I certainly enjoy living here. But I think ultimately it's about great software. So, Leo Rendell, I really appreciate you having me on the webcast
today. Great to talk to you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, John. Okay. Well, a very nice fella. I have to say, I don't normally do enterprise coverage at all.
Well, it's because there's so little open source software that really fits that area.
Even just in general, even commercial software. I always like to cover the end user spectrum. But I do think it's, you know, first of all, I love open source. And I love the idea of open source. And it is so counterintuitive initially to say, base your enterprise on open source software. But after a while, when you talk to people like John, and you start to see what's going on, and Larry Augustin, you realize, in fact, it makes more sense to use open source than it does to use closed source. I mean, you can modify it. There's a whole community developing around it. If a company goes out of business, you're not out of business. I think that makes a lot of sense.
Well, as someone who's made all of their living off of open source for the last 16 years, I could certainly agree with you. I mean, that's what I do at Stonehenge, is basically support Perl and now Smalltalk. And it's because I have access to all these wonderful tools and stuff because it's all open source and it's a community potluck. I take a little, I give a little bit back, and it just grows and grows because everybody can reuse the stuff that I've created for that. And it's clear that this model, especially for something, as I said during the show, where CRM is really one of those things that you really need to customize if you're doing anything fancy. And it has to be customized.
And if you look at the modules, I mean, there's hundreds of modules. And CRM isn't just one thing. It's Salesforce automation. Yep. Yep. It's business intelligence. A lot of different things.
Right. And you have to be able to blend in with your existing business practices. And there has to be ways to glue those together. I mean, you don't want to have to change your business practices just to meet.
To match your software.
Right.
Yeah,
that's actually pretty evil that way.
Yeah.
So, and I love that this company came together out of, you know, a few guys who were working in the proprietary industry who said, wait a second, let's go with open source here. Yeah. And they found people that believed in him and they got the funding. And now, what do you say, 160 people? That's incredible. That's just great that a lot of people are making their living now off of free software, open source software.
They're still not as big as the big guys as SAP and PeopleSoft and Salesforce.com. But I don't see anything to stop them from growing to that size.
But although they may have the customer base that rivals
that's the irony. You can't really measure it, can you?
Because you don't know whether one download means, you know, 500 people using it or five people using it. So there's no way to really measure that directly. Although it sounded like they had some anonymous statistics that they were gathering, had some sense of the market size.
Right.
I mean, who knows? I mean, it's just because they don't have a dollar volume necessarily that equals the big guys. They may have the customer base.
How does the open source community view this kind of thing? Do they see it as selling? I mean, sure, there are some who are, you know, in open source because they're almost anti-business, anti-corporate, anti-commercial.
I think you see it's along the same lines as the starving artist versus the commercial artist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that there are some people that believe that, you know, unless you're suffering for your art, you're not doing art.
Right.
And that there's the rest of us come in and paint the side of a house and say, that's fine.
That's art.
I'll take care of it.
That's my art.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, I have a bias because I've been making my living doing this. And I write software both that gets contributed back to the CPAN and back to the open source areas. And I also, for some of my customers, write software that will never see the light of day outside the company that it's in. And I have a balance between those.
Right.
And it sounds like Sugar CRM Company, again, has that same sort of balance that we're going to open source as much as we possibly can, but we don't mind if there's still that next round of things that are specifically for a client to do a specific thing that we don't need to open source. So I think there's a healthy middle in there. And I think you'll find plenty of people in the open source community that agree with that.
Especially if they're trying to make a living in open source. I mean, that's when you really have to say, is it enough to make a living selling services? I think at some point you kind of have to sell software.
Yeah,
too,
not all
you?
Of us can have a MacArthur grant.
Right. Yeah. Well, but would you agree that's true? I mean, I think, you know, in Linux, for instance, people kind of say, well, you don't really sell the software, you sell the services. See, Sugar seems more like you do a little bit of both, right?
Well, it sounds like, though, that the core of it would
be free
anyway.
Yeah.
But what you're paying for with the next license up is the support.
So it really is selling service.
Yeah, it's totally service.
Yeah.
Sounds like,
yeah.
And probably some customization. You could probably, if you paid them enough money, they would dedicate two engineers for a month to write a module specifically for you, and that probably would stay locked up unless you asked for it to be open.
Well, and clearly there's an ecosystem doing that as well of third-party developers.
Absolutely, yeah.
That's really what you want to see in a program like this.
Yeah.
In any program, when I look at database software, if I don't see a lot of third-party people adding code to it, working on stuff, making customization, then that's not a good sign.
You want to know you're part of a tribe, not an army of one.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And there's no bigger tribe than the open source tribe, and that's the beauty of Floss. Well, Randall, you brought us a very interesting interview this week. I look forward to another open... Yes.
Next week.
You look like you're excited about
something. I want to make sure that people here listening to their show tune in again next week.
Yes.
Because we have the two key engineers at Sun that helped make OpenJDK possible, the Open Java. And not only do we have them on the show, but we also, this is timely because it just finished a few weeks ago.
That's very exciting.
So it's going to be very fun. So please tune in next week. It should be really
fun. I really commend Sun for the movement they've made to making Java be completely open and available. And that's exciting. It's going to be a lot of fun.
It's going to be a good show.
Next time on Floss Weekly. Randall Schwartz, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Leo.
Thank you all for being here. We'll see you next time on Floss Weekly.